we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
Qantas Airlines to require vaccinations as the IATA forms an industry response. Biden's tech czar is a zealous tech regulator. Amazon's AWS outage affects a huge chunk of the internet. And Drupal CMS deploys emergency fix for critical vulnerability. Hey everybody, Mark Jeftovic here with another weekly edition of the Access of Easy Weekly Tech Digest. This is episode 174. Recording this on November 30th, you should be getting the email on December 1st, and the show notes for this week's edition will be at accessofeasy.com/174. Last week's quote was, "The best cure for overconfidence in your beliefs is to constantly remind yourself that you have experienced less than a tiny fraction of a percent of what has happened in the world. This experience, however, ends up representing nearly 100% of how you believe the world works." That was Gautam Baid. Nobody got it. He is the author of The Joys of Compounding, which is one of the, I think, best investment books I've read in quite some time. This week's quote is, "The illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn." Remember the rules for this. Don't search it up online, but the first person to post the correct answer to the show notes page, which I just gave you the URL. You scroll down to the bottom. There should be a comment section there. The first person to get there gets their next web hosting or domain renewal on us. So Drupal, the content management system, has deployed an emergency fix to handle a critical vulnerability. The fix addresses CVE 2020-28948 and CVE 2020-28949. These affect the Pear Archive TAR library, which is included in the Drupal content management system, and any affected Drupal installation that's configured to allow uploading of .tar, .targz, .bz2, or .tlz files is vulnerable to remote code execution. Actually, I think I'm supposed to be saying that .gz or .tlz or .bz2 because I'm Canadian. In any case, if you're configured to allow it, you're in trouble unless you're upgraded to the latest version. I've got version numbers here, and instead of just battering you with a bunch of numbers, just go to the show notes page and you'll see which version you have to be at to be safe from this vulnerability. Drupal is the fourth largest CMS in terms of number of deployments across the internet. Number one is WordPress, and I think number two is Shopify, which surprised me, and I can't remember what number three is. PHP 8 is here already. It seems like it was just yesterday when we finally finished porting all the last crumbly servers that were using PHP 5. Nothing in the core infrastructure was using it, but there's always these satellite servers like MyResolver.com or MyPrivacy that's got some PHP 5 in it. Well, not anymore. Those are all gone. Those are all PHP 7 as of I don't know how long ago, but it seems like it wasn't that long ago. And now PHP 7.1 is going end of life. PHP 8 is here. And the folks over at WordFence put out a primer of sorts describing the kinds of changes that are coming down the pipe. Quote, PHP 8 uses a much stricter typing than previous versions. Many built-in functions are now pickier about the input they accept, and PHP 8 itself is more stringent about how input is passed to functions. Issues that previously resulted in notices now result in warnings, and issues that previously resulted in warnings now result in errors, end quote. So two places where this will make a difference is in WordPress and the aforementioned Drupal, because they're both coded in PHP. WordFence estimates that at least 5,500 WordPress plugins use the create function, which will go away entirely in PHP version 8. Qantas to require vaccinations as IATA forms industry response. So this is following on what now appears to be an emerging theme that the forthcoming COVID-19 vaccines will not be made mandatory by national governments, but will be de facto mandatory by quasi-monopolies operating within the private sector. We reported back in Axis of Easy 172 how Ticketmaster was going to require vaccinations and immunity passports for event attendance. And now the CEO of Australia's Qantas Airlines has made a similar declaration. Qantas CEO Alan Joyce told CNN in an interview that all international travelers will be required to be vaccinated before being permitted to fly once the vaccines are available. In the same vein, the International Air Transport Association has unveiled their plans for a digital platform that they say will enable international borders to reopen. The body says they are in the final testing phase for their IATA Travel Pass app, which will incorporate four open-sourced modules which will, quote, include a global registry that would enable airline passengers to find accurate information about travel, testing, and eventually vaccine requirements for their journey, as well as location of testing and vaccination centers at their departure location, which meet the standards for vaccination requirements of their destination. The pass would also feature a lab app to enable authorized labs and test centers to share and test vaccination certificates with passengers, and a contactless travel app so passengers are able to create a digital passport that would allow them to receive test and vaccination certificates to verify they can travel, which could then be shared with airlines and authorities. End quote. And of course, this app is going to be used to digitally manage all of the documentation for the above. So, ready or not, digital immunity passports are on the way. Meanwhile, Delta Airlines, by the way, recently announced a program offering quarantine-free flights from USA to Europe. Passengers will be tested 3 times over the course of the flight and will not be required to quarantine upon testing negative all 3 times, which, in the face of everything we've been told about asymptomatic transmission and 10 to 14-day germination times, seems a little on the useless side to me. Hacker posts exploit for over 49,000 vulnerable Fortinet VPNs. So a hacker named Pumped Kicks posted details of a path traversal flow in Fortinet VPN devices, which enables attackers to grab system files and authentication details remotely from over the web. The hack exploits CVE-2018-13379, so that's a couple years old. And login credentials for 49,000 affected devices are now circulating on the dark web. So armed with the login details to the VPN devices, hackers can breach the networks behind these VPN points and further compromise the networks, including the launch of ransomware attacks. One security researcher did some DNS analysis on the listed names, and he found among them banks and government agencies. Biden's tech czar is a zealous tech regulator. The presumptive president, Joe Biden, or the presumptive president-elect, Joe Biden, I guess, looks to be tapping his top tech advisor, Bruce Reed, for a key role within the administration. Reed is an avid tech regulator who is behind some new privacy regulations in California. This could have an effect on what happens around Section 230 of the U.S. Communications Decency Act. Section 230 is what shields ISPs and tech platforms from liability arising from content posted, hosted, or traversing their networks. Reed has been a vocal critic of Section 230. He co-authored a chapter in a book, Which Side of History? How Technology is Reshaping Democracy in Our Lives. And in that chapter, he called Section 230 an enemy of children. The Trump administration threatened to rescind Section 230 exemptions from the big tech platforms over their alleged anti-conservative bias. So a switch in regimes now is not really going to give them any relief from pressure on this front, and I'm going to keep an eye on developments. FBI is the latest victim of domain spoofing attacks, the latest organization to come under attack via fake or spoofed domain names, none other than the US FBI. The agency issued a warning via its Internet Crime Complaint Center, IC3, that recently registered lookalike domain names are spoofing some of the FBI's official web properties. The domains have names like FBIUSAGov.online, FBIReport.us, FBI-fraud.com, even FBIGov.art, and myriad others. So remember, our domain sure detects these variations across all delegated TLDs in near real time. So if your organization is or could be the target of this kind of attack, just shoot me an email, markjr@easydns.com, or visit domainsure.com. Take the free domain assessment there. A lot of ransomware attacks this week. So Canon disclosed that a data breach they suffered in August was in fact the result of a ransomware attack. French IT firm Sopra Steria has 46,000 employees across Europe. They were hit by the RIAC ransomware strain and estimate that their losses will run into the 40 to 50 million euro range. A relatively recently formed fertility clinic that became one of the largest in the U.S. after a merger earlier this year revealed that ransomware attackers managed to get into their systems for about a month and stole patient data. I actually don't think I put the name of that clinic in the article now that I'm looking at it. And as I was writing up this item, I saw on the news that schools in Baltimore County, Maryland will be closed today and tomorrow. That's Monday and Tuesday, after their computers had been hit with a ransomware attack. And in Delaware County in Pennsylvania, they paid $500,000 to attackers after their systems were hit with Doppelpaymer ransomware last weekend. Amazon AWS outage affects a huge chunk of the internet. So earlier in the year, we saw how some of the larger infrastructure as a service platforms were becoming a single point of failure unto themselves when we saw a major Cloudflare outage seriously impact the internet. I mean, we use Cloudflare for DDoS mitigation, but we weren't affected because we don't have everything behind Cloudflare, and that paid off in that instance. It was not the first Cloudflare outage, and it won't be the last. Last week, it was Amazon's turn, with AWS suffering a significant outage that had far-reaching effects as well. It was an issue with Kinesis data streams, and I had to admit, I didn't know what those were. I had to look it up when I was writing this piece. They look like a subsystem of AWS that facilitates the capture of metrics from within huge data streams. According to Amazon, it only affected one of their 23 geographical zones, but it caused enough trouble to cascade through such services as 1Password, Adobe Spark, Coinbase, Flickr, Vonage, Washington Post, and the list goes on. Microsoft to deploy productivity score on workers using Office Suite. So, remote work movement looking to be more secular than cyclical, it will be no surprise to see workplace analytics taking a more prominent role in Office collaboration suites. Microsoft introduced workplace analytics for its O365 suite over the summer. The system will make use of various metadata within your email, your calendar, the to and from and subject lines of your emails, timestamps, etc., in order to, quote, create a set of behavioral metrics, end quote, that managers can use to figure out who's doing or not doing what within the organization. Out of all that, the system will compute and assign you a productivity score between 1 and 800. Quote, their particular concern is that Microsoft will make the micro-surveillance of employees mainstream and an accepted part of the work life on the basis of unproven and dubious benefits, which are likely to be hacked by workers doing nonsense grinding in place of real productive work simply to increase their score. End quote. So what's being referred to in that paragraph, which actually came out of the story we linked to from the show notes, it's a phenomenon called Goodhart's Law, which wasn't mentioned in that article, but I've written about Goodhart's Law in the past in the context of customer feedback surveys. And what Goodhart's Law says in its simplest form, is that when a measure becomes a target, it becomes useless. So what it means is that it's okay to have data in order to gain insight into what's going on, but the moment you try to modify outcomes by specifically targeting the measure itself, like customer response performance quotas or behavioral metrics, the behavior shifts to the target score, not the underlying work that creates the target score. And what happens is people end up gaming the system and you get less actual useful stuff done. So for those keeping score at home, so far in this week's edition, what we have coming down the pipe are immunity passports and social credit scores for your job. PowerDNS founder departs for even more interesting gig in civilian oversight. So the original creator of the PowerDNS name server is calling it quits in the DNS biz, and he's moving on to a new gig in civilian oversight. I am speaking, of course, of Bert Hubert, who posted to his blog that he will still keep a hand in the PowerDNS as a minority shareholder, but he's ending his role there. The reason I bring it up here is because of what he's going to be doing instead, and I wanted to include it here. Bert will be moving to a full-time position as one of three members of the Netherlands TIB. It's a citizen panel that oversees warrants of the Dutch intelligence and security services. Quote, if either of the civil or the military intelligence and security services of the Netherlands want to use their lawful intercept, SIGINT, or hacking and some other legal powers, they have to first convince their own jurists, then their ministry, and finally the TIB. The TIB then studies if the warrant is legal, and that decision is binding. End quote. So I love this governance model, and I've been dealing with Bert Hubert personally over the years, so I know he will bring his best to the job. He is an extremely intelligent, rational, down-to-earth guy, and if I could trust anyone doing that kind of an oversight role, it would be him. He gave me a lot of advice on the DNS book. He's helped me out a lot over the years, so congratulations to Bert, and I think this is a good thing. Second Swiss firm discovered selling encrypted devices with backdoor. Okay, so back in Access of Easy 133, we reported how Crypto AG made encryption products which were sold to governments worldwide that turned out to be an intelligence operation controlled by the CIA, who had access to those devices via software backdoors. So now, according to a report by Swiss Public Television, SRF, a second company called OmniSec AG were reported by a whistleblower to have sold OC500 series devices to the Swiss government and other agencies, as well as Swiss banks, during a period of time in the mid-2000s. Turns out those devices were also not secure and were tappable by U.S. intelligence agencies. In Xi's China, there is no room for dissent. So this is a Wall Street Journal article. It was pretty long. It was quite chilling. Follows the story of Liu Yuyu, who is, he's not really a Chinese political dissident per se. At least he wasn't. His crime was that he started covering the activities of Chinese political dissidents and enumerating them online. How many protests were happening, when, where, how many participants were showing up, and just doing that made him a target of government censors and eventually the secret police. One day he was snatched off the street and renditioned into a van to be imprisoned for 4 years. Since his release, government security services have been pressuring his landlord to kick him out of his apartment and harassed anybody even thinking of employing him. Quote, after Mr. Liu was snatched off the street, he spent 4 years in custody. His girlfriend left him. Since his release in June, he said he has been kept under close watch by police. He struggles to find steady work, he said, and suffers from depression. His landlord recently asked him to move, he said, citing pressure from authorities, end quote. While he was in prison, he was put in a cell with 11 other inmates, and he worked 10-hour days sewing garments. Before his eventual release, he was served a judicial notice forbidding him from setting foot in Beijing, Shanghai, or Xinjiang. The Wall Street Journal article is behind a paywall, so I also linked to another, a secondary source on that. And last week on the Axis of Easy Salon, Charles was down with a cold. So it was just Jesse and myself, and we had the good fortune to welcome Dimitri Kafinas on the show. He's the host of the Hidden Forces podcast and interview series at hiddenforces.io. And Hidden Forces really is a first-rate show with amazing guests. He does incredibly detailed rundowns. I love listening to those interviews. We talked to Dimitri about his origins and his process, and it was pretty interesting, so tune it in. That's it for this week. Remember, the show notes for this edition will be at accessofeasy.com/174. And as always, stay healthy, stay sane, stay safe, and we will see you all next week.
Rhymes with your fresh. You're just a whore, but it's yours.